Hello and welcome to the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. Today is Wednesday, July 25th. This is episode number 8, and I did take a day off yesterday, so sorry about that for everybody that was looking for one yesterday, and I'll also be on vacation starting tomorrow until next Tuesday. So I'll be back next Tuesday with some more fun. But in the meantime, I do have quite a bit to talk about today. Both in the cybersecurity and cryptocurrency world, there's been a whole lot of cool stuff happening on both sides. Cool and also scary. The first cybersecurity topic I wanted to get into was the server that exposed Tesla and Toyota information. It was a robotics company called Level One Robotics, and they had an unsecured server out there on the web that exposed 157 gigs worth of highly sensitive data about those two manufacturers. So I thought that was rather interesting that, you know, this kind of goes to the point of, you know, watching those vendors and making sure that if you're going to give a vendor this much information, you better do your homework on them and make sure you know how they're going to store that information. Because if they store it incorrectly, like what happened here, that's a huge exposure and a huge risk to your business and to your organization. It could also be a risk to your profits if somebody else gets a hold of that and there's some proprietary information in there. You know, somebody else could steal your ideas. I mean, all kinds of stuff can happen from that. So, and that's kind of the new attack vector too, it seems. People are going after, you know, to get into the bigger businesses, you go after the smaller ones that are helping the bigger ones. So you go after, like Home Depot, for example. Home Depot's security was rather good, but the HVAC vendor was not so secure. So that's why they got hacked through that vendor. So just keep an eye on those vendors and make sure that whatever access you're giving them, that you know all the access that they have. Try to limit that access. And for HVAC in particular, that should be on its own segmented network, you know, that does not touch your production or internal network at all, ideally. Anyway, Tesla and Toyota, I'm sure, are very PO'd about this because it's quite a bit of data that got out about them. So I'll post the link to that article in the show notes for today. The second one was there was a Bluetooth vulnerability that was discovered. The problem with this, that I have with this, is in order to exploit this vulnerability, you have to, it's basically a man-in-the-middle attack, and you have to be right in the vicinity of this person that's got the Bluetooth, and you can only do it when they're doing, you know, pairing with a headset, for example. First time you set up a Bluetooth device, you have to pair it, right? Well, that's the only time that this vulnerability can be exploited. So, and, you know, you have to be in range of Bluetooth. So this one's very, very difficult to exploit, I would say. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm not exactly pairing my Bluetooth devices every single day. Once they're paired, they're done, right? I'm not sitting there repairing every day. So, I thought that was kind of interesting that they call this a vulnerability. I mean, and I guess in the true sense of it, it is a vulnerability because you can basically do a man-in-the-middle attack, steal those. There's basically a key exchange that happens between the Bluetooth device and your phone, and that key exchange can be intercepted and then spoofed, and malware can be sent and all kinds of other stuff. So the man-in-the-middle attack does exist in that scenario, but you have to catch it right during the pairing of a Bluetooth device. And I just, you know, if you're a hacker and you're trying to go after a high-profile target, you got to be within 20 feet of this person, and you have to hope that this person is doing a pair with a Bluetooth device. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they listed that out there today on the Hacker News. You guys can go out there and check it out. I think the firm that found it was, I think they were either based in Israel or Pakistan. I can't remember which, but it was a firm based out of there. So check out that Bluetooth vulnerability. There was another interesting article on the, there's been an iPhone hacking campaign that's been going on for at least 2 or 3 weeks now. And it originated in India. And they're basically using mobile device management software maliciously. So typically you use mobile device management software to manage your corporate cell phones and tablets and whatnot to make sure that they're secure. Well, these hackers are using their own MDM to do malicious things and track what people are doing, so on and so forth. So all you iPhone users out there, watch out for that. That's very, very scary, the things that they can do if they've... Now, the trick here is you have to enroll your phone. So make sure that, you know, if you're going to download something and it asks you to enroll in something, you better make sure you know where that's coming from. So I'm not sure a lot of people that would fall for this kind of a deal, but apparently a bunch of people have, and they're monitoring a few high-profile targets with it, supposedly. So watch out, you iPhone folks, for that, and don't enroll in anything that you're not expecting. I also think that if your company already does MDM, I'm not sure that you can enroll in a second MDM. So that may be a mitigation, although I'm not 100% sure on that. So check out that one too. I also wanted to follow up on something from yesterday, Monday, that we talked about regarding circumventing multi-factor for Office 365. So I did some more research on that to see how these folks were getting in. I thought it was, you know, mostly through POP3 or IMAP and SMTP, setting that up in a mobile client or an Outlook client. But they're also using an API, which I thought was really tricky. APIs are application programming interface, and typically they're not, you know, they're not used by, you know, end users, obviously. It's usually for integrating two different applications or, you know, some sort of reporting or what have you. So apparently on the API to Office 365, they do not require multi-factor. So that's another way that they were getting around it. Now, the one thing I don't know is how much they can really get with an API. From what I understand, the API is read-only unless you, you know, create a separate API that's not read-only, in which case, you know, that'd be a different story. But all you Office 365 folks, if you have a non-read-only API that you've created for whatever, be very, very careful with that, and try to do some IP address whitelisting for that API. Only let certain IPs connect to it to just help prevent these kinds of attacks. They're basically compromising Office 365 accounts through that API because there's no multi-factor on it. So be very, very careful with that if you've got a API that's not read-only sitting out there with Office 365. On to some cryptocurrency news. I thought this was rather interesting, and I don't know why, but Tron Foundation, they have a cryptocurrency called Tron, T-R-O-N. They purchased and acquired BitTorrent and uTorrent. I thought that was kind of strange that they would acquire those two companies. I don't know why they would. I guess they just had the funds to do it, and they did. But I'm not sure why a cryptocurrency company would want to own those two platforms. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with it moving forward. You know, that was a pretty big purchase. I think it was, you know, at least $100 million, I think, in that range for I think, both of them. I'd have to get the exact numbers, but, you know, it's not a small purchase. And that's a big thing to acquire and take under your umbrella. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any development with that and if they use it for something other than torrenting, or maybe they're going to, you know, make people pay when they're doing torrents. You have to pay in Tron. I mean, who knows what they could be doing with this. So that'll be interesting to see what they do with that moving forward. But for all you torrenting folks out there, uTorrent has tons of ads and drives me insane. I'm sure it does everybody else too. So hopefully Tron, maybe you can pay some Tron to disable those ads. I'd be all for that. So maybe that's their plan. Other cryptocurrency news. There was a Bitcoin exchange that was called Bitfunder. And I think it was, the other one was WeExchange or something like that. The founder and CEO of that company, he was based in Saginaw, Texas, of all places. He got investigated by the SEC and the Securities and Exchange Commission. They basically, I mean, I think he's going to serve 20 years in prison for what he's been doing, falsifying securities and using these funds for personal use. He also did not disclose a hack that happened, and they stole around $650,000 worth of Bitcoin, I believe. So that's a pretty huge chunk of investment there, and quite a bit of money that was stolen during that hack, and he didn't tell anybody about it. And he was trying to create all these other securities and whatnot and trying to raise funds for those, and eventually just stopped working on those projects and just kept those funds for himself. So it's good to see that the SEC is taking action on guys like that. I think that's a huge black eye for the cryptocurrency world, is all these ICOs and whatnot that are happening that are all fraudulent. Obviously some are not, some are legitimate, some are, you know, great projects to invest in, but, you know, some out there are fraudsters, and they're trying to get money any way that they can, and those ICOs are a big way to do that. So be very careful and you know, always vet out whatever company it is that's doing an ICO. Just make absolutely sure that you understand what they're doing, understand what technology they're going to be using, and what problem they hope to solve with their blockchain implementation. There's also a lot of misconception about blockchain in general, that it has to be used with a cryptocurrency. That's not at all right. You can use it for a myriad of things. And, you know, we talked about the gaming platforms that are built on blockchain. There's just so many different uses for it. Inventory systems can be built on this. I believe even UPS and FedEx are going to start looking at this for their logistics applications. So there's all different kinds of ways that you can use blockchain. So it's not just a cryptocurrency. AWS And I think Azure also have blockchain as a service now. So you can actually go out there to AWS or Azure, Microsoft Azure, and purchase an instance and spin it up of blockchain as a service. So thought that was kind of cool too, if you want to just tinker around with it. You know, there's a lot of coding that's involved using that kind of stuff, but if you're good at writing code, that's certainly a cool thing to tinker with. And you get, if you first sign up with Microsoft or Google or whoever it is, or Amazon, they usually give you 30 days free to at least check it out. So I thought that was kind of cool. So if you're really into coding and into blockchain, get you 30 days free and go out there and give that a shot. Let's see what else there was in news today. Google announced that any site that you go to now that is not HTTPS or not a secured site, it's going to say not secure in your browser. So I thought that was kind of interesting move on their part. I'm a fan of it. However, I thought it was, you know, a little, I don't know, a little like ripping the Band-Aid off. But I do think it's going to help in the long run, of all the credential phishing that's happening and whatnot. You know, if you, for example, I mean, people get these phishing links at my job all the time that take them to these fake Office 365 pages. And oftentimes they're not encrypted. They're not HTTPS. They're not using TLS or SSL or anything. And so it would say not secure in the browser now. And I think that's great. For end users specifically, so if you know they see not secure when they clicked on that link, they're going to be very wary, I think, moving forward of, you know, hey, this site's not secure. I'm not going to put in my username and password here. Now, the trick to that, and we've been seeing this too, hackers are using Let's Encrypt to generate a 90-day SSL cert that's legitimate, and they will encrypt their site with that. So they are starting to already mitigate that and get around it. But at least the ones that aren't as sophisticated, hopefully end users will see that. We use Chrome as our primary browser at my job, so end users will be seeing that starting, I believe, today or tomorrow. So I thought that was cool. I think it's great for end users, and you know, hopefully it prevents even more of this credential phishing that keeps happening. So there's also some really cool stuff, speaking of credential phishing and whatnot. Proofpoint is doing a ton of new cool stuff, and if you subscribe to Proofpoint or you have a Proofpoint appliance, they've essentially got some new plugins and new APIs for their TAP dashboard. Basically ties into your Office 365 to alert you of any Office 365 accounts that have been compromised. So that's extremely valuable to me. You know, as a security guy, I want to know who's been putting in their password somewhere and who's potentially compromised. I would love to know that kind of stuff. So they're leveraging that Office 365 API to, you know, correlate information that, you know, that they've received through a, you know, they'll see a phishing email come in with a suspicious link in it, and shortly thereafter they see a login from Russia or something. They would know pretty much right away that that account is compromised. So, and they're going to alert us to that. So I thought that was kind of cool. So, and that's free if you've already got a subscription with Proofpoint and you're using their TAP dashboard. TAP is Targeted Attack Protection. So if you're using that dashboard, you can ask your Proofpoint rep for that. And they get their customer service team on it, and they spin it up for you, and you get a new new icon in your tap dashboard that you can click on and see all that cool stuff. So, and it'll actually send you alerts on it too. So I thought that was really handy. Proofpoint's also getting into the CASB space. CASB's Cloud Access Security Broker. Essentially, it's a middleman for all of your cloud applications. So, for example, if you use Dropbox, the CASB sits in between Dropbox and the end user. And essentially, it can block or prevent the end user from doing certain things. It can prevent them from uploading, you know, a document that has a social security number and sharing it publicly, for example. It could block them from all kinds of different things. You can set these rules up in it based on PCI or whatever else. So I thought that was really, really cool stuff too. Unfortunately, they only support a few applications right now. Office 365 is one. The G Suite from Google is another. Box.com. And I think there was one other one that they're supporting right now. So they don't have a very big supporting, you know, platform for their CASB solution, but they are building that out. And they're supposedly going to have stuff for ServiceNow, Cylance, Dropbox, and a whole bunch of others. But it takes a while to build those integrations and, you know, put that into a pretty looking dashboard in those CASB solutions. But they've got a proxy solution and an API based solution. So if you don't want to do the proxy, you can do their API. So just additional security steps that you can take. And if, you know, if you're really heavily cloud-based environment or SaaS-based environment at your company, like I am, the CASB solution is really essential. Not only does it do monitoring, but it can do active blocking and preventing not only malware, but people from uploading sensitive documents and sharing it publicly and all kinds of other funny stuff. So, highly recommend checking out any CASB solutions that are out there if you're heavily based in the cloud. Another great one to check out is a company called Netskope. It's N-E-T-S-K-O-P-E. Netskope, they do CASB, and they've got a ton of cloud applications that they support right now. And theirs is a full proxy solution. So that's a very, very good one. They're fairly expensive as far as an annual cost goes, but you get what you pay for with them. They also have Netskope has a reputation tool that they've created where they go out and they vet out various cloud vendors. And they give it a security rating and a score, and you can search through that database and see what rating and what scores various vendors, cloud vendors, have received from them. And, you know, you can look at things like their DR plans and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. So highly recommend checking out Netskope if you're looking for a CASB solution. They're pretty top-notch and one of the best, in my opinion. I think at my job, we're probably going to end up going with Palo Alto, I would guess. We're about to roll out some Palo Altos, so I think we're going to go with, I think it's Aperture is what Palo Alto calls their CASB solution, so I believe we'll be going down that road. But I did do a demo with the Netskope folks, and it was pretty slick, pretty slick, so definitely recommend checking them out too. That's all we got for today, episode 8. I will be on vacation till next Tuesday, so y'all have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.